failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the century of lies.
My name is Dean Becker, and I welcome you to this edition of Century of Lies. Today, we'll take a look back at the recent Normal Conference held in San Francisco, the National Organization of the Reform of Marijuana Laws. We'll also hear from a New York politician who has basically called for the legalization of all drugs. We'll hear from a few of the Drug Truth Network reporters. We'll also hear some audio from a torture session done by U.S. cops against a U.S. citizen on the thought that he might have some drugs. But right now, a bit of an interview I conducted with Steve Dillon. He's the chairman of the board of the National Organization of the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
This is my favorite conference every year, of course, but it's unique in many ways, but the rekindling of the spirit of all these different people from Okinawa to Alaska, South Florida, New York, all over this country, over 500 people. We have doctors, we have patients, lawyers, activists on every level, politicians, just people interested in learning more about marijuana. The thing is, at a conference like this, you not only get a chance to speak what you know to a group of people, but you have a chance to learn a ton more. There's real experts here in a lot of different areas involved with drug reform, especially marijuana reform, and it never ceases to amaze me, and I've been involved for more than 30 years, how much I learn at these conferences.
Yes, and it's usually held around the April 20th, the 420 date of the year, and this year the federal government chose to make use of that date for another purpose. Tell us what the recent statements by the feds mean.
What it means is that we're making a significant difference, and the government knows that. The majority of people in the United States believe that people should not be arrested for use of marijuana. A vast majority of people in the United States believe that people should be allowed to use marijuana as a medicine with a doctor's recommendation or prescription. And the government's aware of the fact that even with the national prohibition and with his Supreme Court case last June, which said the feds could still enforce the laws in states that have medical marijuana laws, despite that, Rhode Island passed another law anyway. So I think the federal government is aware of the fact that the majority of the people in this country want change, and they do everything they can to disrupt it, such as interrupt a normal conference on 420 by raiding the place where we were going to have our fundraiser a couple years ago, or having an FDA announcement or anything else they can do to let us know they're watching, I guess.
One could observe that the pronouncements of the government are meant to prolong the their ability to go after people on the federal level. Your thoughts?
They absolutely want to hang on to the prohibition. It's a growth industry for the federal government. They keep trying to expand their control over the people and to take away more rights, I believe, in the war on drugs, just like this so-called war on terrorism that it has eroded many of our constitutional rights. And they don't want to give up that easily. When this prohibition started, we had a bunch of federal agents and government employees left over from the alcohol prohibition. And they picked something they thought would be less controversial. It was certainly a racial decision and motivated by greed and lobbying by many powerful competing interests, such as the paper and drug industries and the oil industries back in the 30s. But the government doesn't like to give up its grip and control over people. And they use fear and they use the structure of the government and forfeiture laws and drug excise tax laws and criminal laws just to kind of continue their power, and they don't like to give it up. But the fact is, it's time to do it. I don't think the government, the federal government, really has the constitutional authority to regulate marijuana on a personal level or with use with a doctor. For example, they didn't pass an 18th Amendment to the United States Constitution to get the power to regulate that substance. I don't think it's constitutional from that basis, and it's certainly not interstate commerce. When marijuana is grown in San Francisco, the patients in San Francisco, the doctors in San Francisco, it's not interstate commerce on any stretch of the imagination. for the federal government to come in and say they need to interfere with that decision of the doctor and the patient to use a medicine that is actually effective in treating a condition.
We're at the Normal Conference here. I'm with Mr. Roger Christie of the Hawaii Cannabis Ministry. Roger, there have been a couple of panels here. There's been a lot of discussion here. I think around this planet, a lot of need for understanding about the use of sacramental marijuana. Tell us what that means to you, sir.
We need a big breakthrough here on planet Earth. The whole world over has been denied this fantastic essential resource. It's a forced scarcity on the planet for the last 70 years at plus. And the normal convention is a way to emphasize what's missing and the points that are needed, as far as I can tell here. I'm stoked to be here. I'm pumped up. And I bring to the table the religious defense to prosecution that every sincere cannabis enjoyer can claim. I believe it's an inheritance. It's a gift of God. It's like finding the coolest treasure in the world, and everybody gets to share in the bounty.
Now, Roger, if folks wanted to learn more about this subject and your help, assistance, interpretation, where might they go on the web?
Great. www.thc-ministry.org. That's our headquarters in Hawaii, our main website, and it's a very sincere effort. What I bring to the table is, as I call it, the religious defense to prosecution, and its foundation is the sincerity of the enjoyer, of the user. So I can't give a person sincerity, but I can assist them with legitimacy. Once a sincere spiritual user of cannabis gets legitimacy for their use of the herb, then they qualify. There's a case called State versus Blake, and they actually created the Andrews test, and that it's if someone was to receive a religious defense to prosecution, a constitutional defense, by the way, then they would need to be sincere and legitimate. And to me, the big difference, Dean, here between medical, because I don't really fight for medical rights so much anymore. I fight for the right for healing with cannabis. But what I've discovered is that medical marijuana is a privilege. You have to be sick, and it lasts for 1 year. And then at the end of that year, you need to be sick again to qualify for another year. Now, that nobody wants to pray for that, but of course, people want the protection. So the spiritual religious use, or as I call it, constitutional use, First Amendment use of cannabis, is a right that we get for life. Once you understand that and build a foundation of a sincere spiritual user, then you have the right to the tree of life for the rest of your days. It's a very beautiful thing.
Well, you know, Roger, there are other ministers here at the conference. There's much discussion about pending litigation and situations with the government over this right, our right, for sacramental marijuana. I, too, am I call myself the High Reverend of the Church of God's Evident Truth. God spoke to me some 25 years ago and asked me to do something to help end this madness, to help return the planet to some sort of balance. It's good to find one another, is it not?
Yeah, it truly is. We're on the cannabis road, and you know, there are blessings in everything, even in tragedies. If you can bless them, like my spiritual foundation now is, I like to take bummers and turn them into blessings. And how I do that is I say, God, that's great. Please show me the blessings in this situation, and hurry. And when I have faith and back that up, I find, Dean, that this formula, it's a spiritual formula, it's very practical, it works 100% of the time. And one of the blessings in cannabis prohibition, for instance, is us getting together. I wouldn't, you know, obviously we wouldn't have this event. I think it's kind of like a trellis that a vine grows on, or almost like a fruit tree that gets damaged in a storm and puts out more fruit. The prohibition is a way to build our mana, our spiritual power, or not. And it's an invitation from God to dig deeper into ourselves and find the kingdom of heaven within.
All right. We're at the Normal Conference. I'm with Philippe Lucas of the Vancouver Island Compassion Society. Philippe, what's your take? You're from Canada. Things are kind of in limbo up there at the moment. What are you learning from this conference?
Well, I think that unfortunately in Canada right now we're moving a little bit closer towards an American-style drug war. We've got a new conservative government that's proposing a mandatory minimum sentencing similar to the U.S., and that's scaring many people who are involved in drug policy reform. Myself, as a distributor of medicinal cannabis, it's rather worrisome because they're talking about having mandatory minimums even for cannabis distribution, and I don't think they're going to be differentiating between medical and recreational distribution at that point at all. Yesterday, we really saw the polarity of cannabis prohibition in Canada and drug prohibition in Canada. In outside of Toronto, a smokeasy called Up and Smoke Cafe was busted by the Hamilton police. They had 20 people lie on the ground, came in with their guns drawn and tasers drawn, and arrested four people because during the 420 celebration, this organization had given away some joints, I think, to activists to celebrate 420. And yet, on the other side of the country, in British Columbia, we had new Vancouver Mayor Sam Sullivan say that he wanted to move towards the legal distribution of all illicit drugs before the Olympics get to town in 2010. And so that would mean controlled access to everything from liquor to heroin to cocaine. He's willing to explore these kinds of what might be considered radical but really are common sense approaches to ending this war on drugs that's been so damaging to all of us.
It's the last day of the normal conference here in San Francisco, and I'm with our corrupt cop reporter, Mr. Phil Smith.
Hey, this is Phil Smith of the Drug War Chronicle, sitting here in San Francisco. Got to say I'm doing the corrupt cop story this week because police corruption in the drug war doesn't stop even for normal. This week, among other stories, we have a twofer of ripoffs hidden as drug raids. First, in Lumberton, North Carolina, a former Robeson County Sheriff's deputy was arrested April 13th on charges he was part of a gang that kidnapped and robbed alleged drug dealers in robberies masquerading as drug raids. Former Deputy Patrick Ferguson, age 34, became the second deputy arrested in the case, along with four other men, the Associated Press reported. They are accused of using Sheriff's Department equipment and vehicles to kidnap and hold for ransom a Maxton man during a fake drug raid in May 2004, as well as robbing people at gunpoint and two other fake drug raids in Virginia Beach. Meanwhile, in Memphis, a reserve Memphis police officer was charged April 13th with robbing drug dealers of tens of thousands of dollars in cash, cocaine, and personal belongings while making arrests, the Memphis Commercial Appeal reported. Andrew Hunt, age 29, faces federal charges of violating civil rights, armed robbery, possession of a firearm in a crime of violence, and conspiracy to distribute cocaine. He would use an informant to set up a drug deal, then rip off the dealer and reward the informant with some of the proceeds. He faces a mandatory minimum 55-year sentence on the gun charges and could get up to 105 years. His mother is a secretary to Memphis Police Director Larry Godwin. We've also got an FBI special agent in charge hanging out with the wrong folks, a Berkeley Evidence Room cop with a bad habit, and more cops running interference for drug gangs. Check them all out online at www.stopthedrugwar.org.
On April 28th, the Mexican Congress followed in the footsteps of the Mexican Senate in calling for the end of arrests for people carrying personal amounts of any drug, to include marijuana, hashish, opium, heroin, cocaine, mushrooms, cactus, LSD, you name it. Politicians are waking up to the need for change one at a time. It just happened in Buffalo, New York. We're speaking with the Erie County Executive, Joel A. Giambra, from Buffalo, New York. There's been a bit of a brouhaha about the word legalized drugs up in your area, as there is across most of America. Tell us, if you will, summarize the situation.
Well, Dean, last week we had the unfortunate homicide of a nun who was very much involved in trying to right the lives of people who were in trouble in this community, people who have had prior law enforcement issues, and she ran a group home, and unfortunately one of the members of that group home has taken her life. And I was asked to comment on this by one of the local media, and I suggested that, you know, this would be a very... while some might think it was inappropriate, a very appropriate time to raise the level of discussion around the whole issue of the drug culture and the criminal aspects of that, what it's doing to urban America and how, you know, the blood of innocent people is being spilled on the streets of Buffalo in the urban center and across the country, and that we needed to rethink the strategy that we were using with this war on drugs, the so-called war on drugs, which has been obviously an attack and a war on drugs for over 30 years, and based on the outcomes, it appears that we're losing that war. So I decided to say that we needed to have another discussion to see if we can really have an impact on returning the streets of urban America back to the people and not to the criminals.
Well, I understand you had a discussion with a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, Mr. Peter Crist, one of the founding members, and therefore the outright legalization. I think it important that we at least begin the discussion on the need for change. What's your thought there, sir?
Well, we definitely have to have a discussion because, again, you know, Albert Einstein, in his definition of insanity, he said that if you believe that you can do things the same way all the time and get a different result, that's insanity. And there are still people in law enforcement today here in Western New York and around the country that believe that you can continue the war on drugs using the same tired solutions and effectuate a different outcome. And the fact of the matter is that's insane. It hasn't worked. It appears that our ability to win the war on drugs with this current policy is just making pretend. And I said it's time to stop pretending. It's time to stop being in denial and recognize that we've got to maybe try a different solution if we're really serious about eradicating the scourge on urban America.
And that's the point. I think in the beginning, you know, this drug war was supposed to prevent our children having access. It was supposed to stop the violent gangs, etc. But every reason for which it began has now proven quite the opposite.
Absolutely. And the statistics are pretty clear that it has not been effective and will not be effective as long as it's treated as a criminal matter as opposed to a public health issue.
The other side, if you will, I call them drug warriors, tend to want to put off any discussion. I see where the Erie County District Attorney, Frank Clark, stated, "I'm not going to dignify the efficacy of his remarks by putting it to a debate." Your thoughts?
And that's pretty much a traditional, it appears to be a traditional response from current law enforcement people who are afraid, if you will, to admit that they're involved in a policy that's ineffective and not working, quite frankly. So it's easier to try to shoot the messenger than to have an intellectual, thoughtful debate about the real issues that are going to obviously, again, as I said, allow us to return the streets of urban America back to the people.
Well, you know, sir, I offer $1,200 cash to any drug warrior anywhere on the planet willing to spend 15 minutes talking about the need for drug war, and 4 years into it, no one has ever responded.
No, and that's the interesting part, and that, you know, it's very interesting to know that there's a group of a national organization of law enforcement officials, professionals, both police officers, prosecutors, and judges, who are of the same mindset as myself, and it sounds like yourself, that we need to try a different strategy. And, you know, it's very rewarding to know that there's Nobel laureate economists like Milton Friedman and Gary Becker who are also of the same mindset that I am, that we've got to try something different if we're really serious about dealing with the problem.
Well, let me ask you this. Your fellow politicians, is it behind closed doors? Is it an open topic of discussion, or is it ever addressed?
It's obviously addressed only, unfortunately, even though I've raised the subject here publicly, still behind closed doors. There are no other elected officials who want to journey out onto this limb that I put myself out on. But privately, they will admit to you, to a person, that the war on drugs cannot be won, and we haven't been successful. And I've even had friends of mine in law enforcement who can't say that publicly, but will tell you that in private conversations, that that they agree that with the amount of money that's being generated in the black market and through this criminal enterprise, the possibility of stopping it is very, very low.
And that's the point, that the gang violence that seems to permeate neighborhoods all across America is primarily, almost totally, a result of the money that they earn from selling drugs to our children.
Absolutely. We had a notorious drug czar, if you will, that was in this community in the inner city. And for years, law enforcement said, if we could only get this guy, we'll solve the problem. Well, they finally got the guy about 10 years ago. And the day they locked him up, his relatives were right behind him taking over the drug activity. So it's again, it's denial that's taking place now within law enforcement and the elected community on this subject.
What's it going to take, sir? I mean, I see it as glacially slow, incremental, but movement nonetheless. People are becoming more aware. What will it take to awaken the politicians to the possibility of actually coming out a hero by supporting this?
Unfortunately, I think what it's going to take, Dean, is really, unfortunately, thousands and thousands of more innocent people being killed with bullets being sprayed on the streets of urban America. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to take some more time. And that's what's going to get people's attention. When, as we continue to see innocent bystanders being subjected and killed with this drug trade before other elected officials are willing to speak up and speak out on this issue.
Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
Opium production in Afghanistan has increased exponentially since the U.S. invasion in 2001. Estimates for 2006 are expected to surpass or remain at current bumper crop levels. An astonishing 90% of the world's heroin now originates in U.S.-controlled Afghanistan. Poppy eradication and rumors of eradication have nearly doubled farm gate opium prices since last October, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan announced this week. British Defense Minister John Reid recently stressed that British forces will not be involved with eradication efforts. The British military is seeking to keep its forces as far away from the poppies as possible. Despite poppies crowding along their razor wire defenses, the commander of Canadian troops in Afghanistan announced similar intentions this week, emphasizing Canada's resolve to avoid damaging the plants. In Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Illinois, Ohio, Delaware, and possibly Maryland, a dramatic surge in overdoses is being attributed to heroin adulterated with the high-powered painkiller fentanyl. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
War is any means of breaking the will of the enemy. Drugs are a means of waging war. In a drug war, the enemy is defeated when the distraction of crime, corruption, and easy money is greater than the fear of the consequences of defeat. By the mid-60s, the federal government was facing a formidable enemy. Not in the jungles of Vietnam, but right here on the streets of America, as the civil rights movement was in full swing. Groups of people on college campuses and in thousands of cities across the country were organizing to oppose the war and marching for civil rights. The will of these groups was strong, and for a time, it looked like there would be revolutionary change in America. But President Johnson signed the Controlled Substances Act, and the streets were soon filled with controlled substances. Groups started losing members. Police jailed protesters on drug charges by the thousands. The will of the people was broken by drugs and by drug war. And the timely boost in the illegal drug trade that gutted the civil rights movement? Was that just coincidence? Or could it be that the simultaneous government importation and prohibition of drugs, as revealed just a few short years later during the Iran-Contra scandal, is just another standard weapon in the arsenal of empire? For the Drug Truth Network, this is Phil Jackson.
I'm Terry Nelson, a spokesperson for LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I'm constantly amazed at what transpires on a daily basis in this country. I want to talk about an issue that happened in a small town just south of Fort Worth, Texas. On April 1st, a young man was booked into the Hood County Jail on marijuana possession charges. And on his first night in the jail, he was badly beaten by other inmates. This young man had an existing medical condition, Crohn's disease, and the beating caused him even more severe damage. The charges were dropped the following day, and he was released, of course, but he's still in hospital recovering from the beating. Now, one must wonder why this young man was incarcerated in the first place if he was a nonviolent person. He presented no direct danger to society, yet he was placed in a dangerous situation created by an irresponsible governing body. The charges were dropped, but he still became a victim. Innocent though he was, he became a victim of the war on drugs. It is time for our elected officials to stand up and help fix a problem that is just getting worse each year. The government's overfunded war on drugs can never be won. The focus has been lost, and the playing field is not even. It's time for a national debate. It's time to discuss how to proceed with dealing with the problems of drug use and abuse in this country. Elected representatives should be contacted and instructed to take the lead as it is obviously the right course to take. I don't claim, and LEAP does not claim, to have the answer or a silver bullet that will fix this overnight. But I do know that what we've been doing for the past 30 years is not working. The system is broken. Let's fix it. This is Terry Nelson signing off for LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. That's www.leap.cc.
I want to close out today's look at NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, with an interview I did with the director, Mr. Alan St. Pierre.
It's been very exciting. I think a lot of folks are enthused. I always feel very invigorated. Tell us what's been going on at the conference.
Well, we've had lots and lots of panels dealing with all the major issues that people care about, mainly regarding marijuana prohibition, but easily bleeding over into the war on drugs, to be sure. And so we've looked at all kinds of different things, how to get together or organize better, from grassroots to grass tops. We've looked at the information having to do with medical marijuana and new applications for medical marijuana and emerging applications for the therapeutic uses of it. We've looked at the forensic science around drug testing and olfactory, which is drug dog searches. We've had panels that look at high-tech communication, such as we're engaged in right now. And so it has been another terrific NORML conference. I just did the tally. We've had 503 people.
The doctors are presenting science that, the FDA seems to think is not quite right. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, it is amazing that during a NORML conference, once again, major news was made, and the idea that the FDA would put out a release on 420, quite ironically, claiming that marijuana has no medical uses when we have a room full of doctors and clinicians and researchers with published peer-reviewed information that clearly marijuana is a medicine. So, once again, it was really high irony at the NORML conference. Well, people want to get involved in changing marijuana laws and get involved with the larger effort of drug policy reform. NORML is a good way to get involved, and people can reach us toll-free in Washington, D.C. at 888-67-NORML, N-O-R-M-L, or if they want to reach us on the web, they can do so at www.normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
Each year in America, 1.6 million people are arrested. They're searched, they're frisked, their possessions are taken, and seldom, if ever, is a working tape recorder left undiscovered by these officers. When Tennessee law enforcement officials showed up the home of Lester Seiler, a first-time convicted drug dealer out on probation, they asked his wife and 8-year-old son to leave. They didn't know that Lester's wife had turned on a tape recorder in the kitchen when Lester exercised his constitutional right not to sign a consent search in his house. These officers spent the next 2 hours torturing him. They beat him with bats and guns, held loaded guns to his head, threatened to shoot him, dunked his head in the toilet, burned him with lighters, attached his testicles to a battery charger, threatened to cut off his fingers, and threatened to torture his wife. Then they arrested him for evading arrest. This is your drug war in action.
Okay, I've been on one down nice to you.
You know what I'm saying? It's
you,
Gene, I'm
going
to break your
fucking
finger if you don't sign.
I've been trying to tell you to get
I don't give a fuck.
It don't make no difference. Which way you go? Go with us, go to Amazon, make no difference.
You sign this son of a bitch right now. If you don't sign it, I'm going to knock the hell out of you. I said sign it, goddamn thing. I ain't fucking with you no more. Now sign it. Now that's just the fucking beginning. We'll just figure about an hour and a half beating the hell out of you. You'll eventually sign it.
Four.
Huh? Yes or no?